Chapter 8. Christian Science Abroad and at Home. Healing is the best sermon. Healing is the best lecture and the entire demonstration of Christian Science. The sinner and the sick healed are our best witnesses. Mary Baker Eddy, 1902. Over 2,000 people gathered at Queen's Hall, London, on Tuesday, May 6th, to hear a lecture by the Honorable William G. Ewing. One peculiar account in the London Onlooker was entitled, quote, "Being the Impressions of an Unbeliever," end quote. In capsule, the unbeliever stated, "The date is graven on the tablets of my memory. I believe now that the speaker believed he had a message to deliver, and that his message was true. It may be true, it may be false, but he believed in it with his whole heart and soul, or he is the most marvelous and magnetic actor that has ever faced the public gaze." This is an admittedly impressionist sketch of one who went to jeer, but who found that the jeer died upon his lips. Very soon, glowing reports of this and Judge Ewing's other lectures in Great Britain were pouring into Boston, along with many grateful letters of appreciation. Edward A. Kimball received a very different and unexpected letter in May. It was from Mrs. Eddy, and in it she asked him to, quote, "be prepared to take the position of editor of the journal," end quote. At the end of December, Kimball and Mackenzie had completed their work on the revision of Science and Health, and Mr. Kimball had resumed a very heavy lecturing schedule, with often a lecture each day, and on occasion, two lectures in one day. He expected to be back in Boston in June to teach the normal class of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, but he had not expected to continue in Boston. In writing of Jesus's experience in her message to the Mother Church for 1902, page 18, the leader was writing also of her own experience. "The constant spectacle of sin, thrust upon the pure sense of the Immaculate Jesus, made him a man of sorrows. He lived when mortals looked ignorantly, as now, on the might of divine power, manifested through man, only to mock, wonder, and perish. Sad to say, the cowardice and self-seeking of his disciples helped crown with thorns the life of him who broke not the bruised reed and quenched not the smoking flax, who caused not the feeble to fall, nor spared through false pity the consuming tares." The cowardice and self-seeking of the woman's disciples had prolonged the Woodbury trial and increased the cost tremendously, which trial was won only legally, for the malicious lies had proliferated ever since. She seemed to have but one student who could be counted upon to use good judgment, who could represent her satisfactorily, who could say or do the tactful and proper thing without her constant supervision, and that one was Edward A. Kimball. She needed Mr. Kimball every place, and under mine's direction, that is where she kept him, helping God's cause on every front. Septimus J. Hanna was earnest, dedicated, and very well liked, but his editing had caused Mrs. Eddy and or her attorneys concern on more than one occasion in the past several months, until the leader felt she must have more help than he was giving her. It is altogether possible that she also was removing Hannah from his positions in Boston for another reason. Infinite love had revealed to Hannah the leader's spiritual identity as the second coming of the Christ, and he had been unfaithful to his own revelation when he had failed to support his leader during the Woodbury trial. Early in June, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Mr. Kimball, quote, "I must have an advocate. The cause must have an advocate in those at the head of our publications who will not dodge when they should fire and not fire when it is unwise," end quote. She had decided that the editorship was not Mr. Kimball's place, but asked him what he thought about making Archibald McClellan editor-in-chief. Mr. Kimball replied on June 3rd, "I grieve much because Judge Hannah has failed to meet your views and the needs. But if there is to be a change, I am indeed inclined to think McClellan would be as good as any." 5 days later, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Mr. McClellan, whom she had not met. "Dear student, I am today in receipt of your telegram to Mr. Kimball. I would gladly confer with you on the subject of becoming editor-in-chief of the Christian Science Journal and Christian Science Sentinel. But as I am situated now, it seems quite impossible. You are aware that an editor should be reliable in word and deed, adroit, wise, apt in discerning the public need, in rebuking the private evil, and unselfish in doing it. Cowardice, deceit, will without wisdom, have imposed on me tasks incredible. It is wise to protect, as far as possible, a leader, instead of putting her to the front in every battle, laying her on the altar, and saving themselves. I have now no relatives to defend me, and my age requires some consideration after 36 years of constant conflict. I have helped Judge Hannah to the advantageous positions he occupies, but he forgets this. I request the editor of our periodicals to send the proofs to me of special articles they write about me, and to head no articles, quote, 'Defense of Mrs. Eddy,' end quote. My history is enough for that. For the sake of our cause, I oft-times change orders and veer like a weather vane. A direction that is right under existing circumstances may change the next hour, for circumstances alter cases. Then I countermand my order, and it works well. Mr. Kimball's recommendation of you is very satisfactory. May I name you for editor-in-chief of the Christian Science Journal and Christian Science Sentinel? Please wire yes or no." There may have been one more reason that Mind was telling the leader to remove Judge Hannah from Boston: the need for a progressive bylaw for her church. Hannah had been the first reader of the Mother Church for 7 years, and its pastor prior to the inception of readers. Before the end of May, Mrs. Eddy had her directors publish a bylaw amendment stating that, quote, "Every third year, the Mother Church shall elect new readers," end quote. Judge Hannah stepped aside graciously from both the readership and editorship, perhaps truly grateful for the rest. Mrs. Eddy had him appointed immediately to the board of lectureship. Soon, the Hannas moved to Colorado to serve in the Western section. While the directors were concerned with replacements for Hannah's positions, Mr. Kimball was teaching the 1902 normal class. One of the students in this class was Calvin C. Hill. Another was Reverend Simonson's wife, Mary E. Simonson. A young couple, Bessie and Herbert Eustace, traveled from California to attend the class, which Herbert called, quote, one of the most joyous and enlightening experiences that has come to me, end quote. He wrote of this experience. Those who knew Mr. Kimball know what a profound and analytical thinker he was. In that class, truths that were dimly stirring in the depths of my own aroused thought were elucidated. Truths which, with their logical sequences, meant genuine Christian science. Truths that meant that, quote, clear, correct teaching of Christian science, end quote, rather than faith and belief in it. Mr. Eustace also stated that their main reason for wanting to attend the class was to learn more about handling malicious mind. He was impressed by the following, and doubly so when he considered that the message was sent, quote, to a body of scientists who had gathered from the ends of the earth with the sole intention of later teaching classes themselves, end quote. I remember Mr. Kimball brought a message to the class directly from Mrs. Eddy. The message was that the only excuse for holding any class was to show how evil was to be handled, quietly, without publishing it broadcast. That was the one purpose. It was not for anything else. The graduates of this class attended a meeting of all the normal class graduates, 1899 through 1902, at the Mother Church on Monday, June 16th. The day before had been Communion Sunday, but the communion service had not been held in the Mother Church. Because large crowds were expected from far and wide, a morning and an afternoon service were held in Mechanics Hall. The reports estimated that 12,000 people attended, including a contingent from Germany. Christian Science in Germany. Germany will be the first European nation to accept Christian Science. Their love of God, their profound religious character, their deep faith and strong intellectual qualities make them particularly receptive to Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy. In the winter of 1896-97, an American woman wintering in Dresden for the enjoyment of the German music and art was also studying science and health, and interesting her acquaintances there in its message. After returning to New York, she convinced Laura Lathrop that a worker should be sent to Dresden, and Mrs. Lathrop sent Francis Thurber Seal to this outpost over the latter's protests. Mrs. Seal knew no German, had limited borrowed funds, and had been studying science little over a year when she set sail for Germany in December of 1897. But she had the feeling that God was sending her on this mission. God indeed inspired her healing work and directed every action of her daily life, which direction unexpectedly brought her back to New York and to the 1899 normal class in Boston. Also unexpectedly, the Board of Education awarded Mrs. Seal a certificate to teach and requested that she go to Berlin, the German capital, to establish Christian Science there. So the summer of 1899 found Mrs. Seal in Berlin. Her healing work was more than remarkable. It was stupendous. Her patients never said they came for treatment, but that they had come to be healed by the Christ healing. Most of them spoke no English. So after beginning English services, Mrs. Seal had her first German student in Berlin, Frau Bruno, translate the lesson, and she and I read it. I practiced with her several hours each week. Through constant prayer and the consecrated study of the English lesson, in addition to the coaching by her, I was soon able to understand the translated word and read it so that it was not only satisfactory to the people, but brought out much healing. This was pure demonstration, as I had never studied German, having had to give all my time to studying Christian Science and to the healing work. The healing work, plus all the work connected with the services, kept Mrs. Seal busy night and day until she began feeling a sense of depletion. In her words, "I had been so constantly busy many hours of each day that while I read some of the books and studied the Sunday lesson, it seemed difficult to lose myself and lay aside the problems of the practice and the church long enough to go into the mountain to refresh my thought. After a time, there came to me a sense of barrenness, together with spiritual hunger, that could be appeased only by deep draughts of truth." This situation caused Mrs. Seal to plan a quiet day for study only, asking a lady who came for healing for her mother to please come the next morning. All that day and far into the night, Mrs. Seal walked and talked with God, and she was still on the mountaintop the next morning when the two women arrived. In fact, her elevated thought remained in love, and she did not even hear the claims they told her. In parting, the mother said that if God would let her look upon her daughter's face, she would be willing to die. To which Mrs. Seal responded that God would let her look upon her daughter's face and live. Then she bade them good morning and did not think of them again. The younger woman led her mother to the streetcar and placed her in a seat where she looked out the window at the street and trees and flowers. She spoke of what she saw. Then her daughter screamed and told the people that her mother had not been able to see for many years. The mother had been totally blind for many of her 67 years, quote, "had suffered many things of many physicians," end quote, and had finally been told that there was no hope of recovering her sight. In one Christian Science treatment, her sight was restored. Mrs. Seal was almost as overwhelmed as were they. It must have been a thrilling experience for the people on that streetcar, for both mother and daughter talked telling of her past affliction, and that God had healed her. No words could describe the awe that filled my thought in the presence of this demonstration of the Christ power. Our weekly testimony meeting took place on the following evening, and everyone who had been on that streetcar attended this service. The seats were all filled, and the people stood in the hall and adjoining rooms. In May of 1901, First Church of Christ Scientist Berlin sent greeting to the Mother Church. Their progress report was intended for the annual meeting, but as there was no annual meeting in 1901, it was published in the Sentinel. In October 1900, we organized a church under the laws of Germany. The police department treated us with the greatest courtesy. They asked for a copy of our regulations, creed, etc., to place on file. I sent them one of the printed slips with the tenets of the Mother Church. So our tenets form a part of the official records of this empire. Our English congregation averages about 50. The German congregation averages 75 on Sunday, and from 100 to 150 at the week meetings. It is difficult for the Germans to obtain release from their state church. A German who is not confirmed cannot sign a legal contract, according to present laws. Much healing work is being done. Many earnest seekers come to inquire about this wonderful revelation of truth, for these strong, earnest thinkers are reaching out for a demonstrable Christianity. And then the persecution began. The emperor issued orders for the police to stop the meetings, get rid of the American woman, and exterminate the teaching. For several months, Mrs. Seal could scarcely find a place to lay her head, let alone receive patients or hold meetings. Few fell away, even though the surveillance was extreme. If a patient was confined to his bed, a detective was stationed in the house in the hope that the patient might die and Mrs. Seal be arrested on criminal charges. In one extreme case, a woman was told she could not live 24 hours without an operation, which she refused to have. Her husband fearfully went for Mrs. Seal, and the physician notified the police, who sent a detective to stay until the woman died. She recovered within a few days, and the detective who had watched the case came to the services as soon as the official surveillance was withdrawn. The Sentinel on February 27, 1902, stated in an article entitled, quote, Christian Science in Germany, end quote. Much has recently been said in the newspapers concerning opposition to the spread of Christian Science in Germany. The dispatches are to the effect that the Emperor of Germany has intervened to prevent its further inroads into court circles. It has also, it would seem, been discussed in the Reichstag. According to this article, a member of the Reichstag stated that Christian Science should be suppressed in Germany as it had been in the United States, which gives us a picture of the unfavorable treatment Christian Science was receiving from the press in 1902. But as Mrs. Eddy had written many years earlier, quote, God is responsible for the mission of those whom he has anointed, end quote. Bible scholars who have devoted themselves to tracing and locating the 12 tribes of Israel state that Finland is the tribe of Issachar. They quote Finland's president at a time of invasion in the 20th century as stating to his people, quote, "Sons of Issachar, arise," end quote. These scholars say that Denmark is the tribe of Dan, and Germany is the tribe of Judah. Germany, like Judah, was always strong and seemed to fulfill Jacob's prophecy, quote, "Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee," end quote. But there is more to Jacob's prophecy for Judah, which Germany also seems to have fulfilled. Quote, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come," end quote. If we find Shiloh in a current dictionary, it may say, a park in Tennessee, a battle in the Civil War, or an ancient village in Palestine. However, if we use the key to the scriptures that Mrs. Eddy has given us, we find that Shiloh means tranquil and is an epithet for the Messiah. It comes from a primary root meaning, quote, "to be tranquil," i.e., secure or successful. "Be happy," "prosper," "be in safety," end quote. When the children of Israel, Christ's offspring, understand and demonstrate science, are they not tranquil, secure, successful? Does not science teach one to be happy, prosper, be in safety? Christian science is truly the coming of Shiloh. The safety that inheres in Shiloh was manifested in Mrs. Seal's experience at the time of the persecution. Germany had a law which provided that any foreigner could be sent out of the country on 3 days' notice without being given any reason. If the person sent away wished to know the reason, he could learn it only through an inquiry made by his government. Many people who knew this wondered that they did not avail themselves of this law to get rid of me. There could be but one reason, that God had sent me there and sustained me. The newspapers carried many articles traducing Mrs. Seal, calling her an American swindler. But not one of her students lost faith. During the months of constant harassment, every case was healed, and the cause prospered. The young workers took the simpler cases and did much healing, while the more difficult cases were left to me. I, too, was a young worker, for I had known Christian Science only 3 or 4 years at this period. Hence, there could be no question that Christ did the work. The human workers were equipped only with love and obedience. As time went on and the early students gained an experience, they also took so-called fatal cases, such as tuberculosis, cancer, blindness, etc., and all were healed. There were no failures. In the spring of 1902, the work was progressing beautifully, and the persecution was a thing of the past. In a spirit of rejoicing, Mrs. Seal and some of her students crossed the ocean to attend the communion service of the Mother Church. When Mrs. Seal heard Mrs. Eddy's message to the Mother Church for 1902, she felt that the leader's heart had spoken directly to hers in the words, quote, "Beloved brethren, another year of God's loving providence for His people in times of persecution has marked the history of Christian Science. Evil, though combined with formidable conspiracy, is made to glorify God." End quote. The following week found these students from Germany visiting in Concord. At the Wednesday evening meeting of June 25th, Mrs. Seal, Frau Friedrich, and Baroness von Beschwitz all gave testimonies of the work in Germany. The Concord Monitor reported these and other testimonies at the overflowing meeting, but it did not know of another meeting of far more importance to Mrs. Seal. Francis Thurber Seal was, in fact, overwhelmed by this meeting, for on her second day in Concord, Mrs. Eddy came to visit her, an honor she had never even dreamed of. She told me that she was engaged in a most important work, the completion of the government of the Mother Church, and she had found it necessary to declare that she would not receive any visitors during this summer, so she could not invite me to her home, but must come to me. Mrs. Seal could not understand why she should be so honored, and when she asked the reason, Mrs. Eddy replied, "I could not let you go away without taking your dear hands in mine and looking into your brave eyes and saying, thank you." "Thank me, Mother? For what?" asked Mrs. Seal. "For being brave and true, for facing error courageously and standing with truth," replied the leader. Mrs. Seal wrote, "I had not known that she knew aught of conditions in Germany, but she said, I know always what my children are doing and of truth's progress and triumph." The leader expressed her joy at their victory and likened their persecution to that of the early Christians. She also said that God would reward their faithfulness, and that the demonstration that their courage and loyalty brought about would strengthen many in years to come. She sent her loving greetings to the workers in Germany who had stood with Mrs. Seal. "This loving recognition of our work and tender benediction upon it sent me back to my German home and field with joy unspeakable. I had indeed found a mother in Israel, one who knew the pains of her children, watched over them and with them, and rewarded them with her blessing." The leader had known about the persecution in Germany, but she had given no visible aid or support. She had let Mrs. Seal, quote, "stand or fall by her own demonstration," end quote. And she had stood. From this time on, Mrs. Eddy frequently sent messages to strengthen and encourage their work. No doubt she also knew that Shiloh had come to Germany and the balance of Jacob's prophecy was being fulfilled. Quote, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh come. Unto him shall the gathering of the people be," end quote. Him, Shiloh, is Christian Science.